All right. Welcome, everybody. I am William DeHewitt, and I am broadcasting live. Live from the vast plains of the Free State, somewhere in the old Boer Republic. I should say broadcasting from the unfree state, because ever since 1992, when the Jews gave this once beautiful country to the Negroids on a silver tooth platter, well, it's been the unfree state, not the free state, folks. As many of you probably are aware, I've not been live the past few weeks. I've had some personal issues going on here, as usual. You know, life happens. So the last show I did live was about the Boers and about South Africa, and I continued on the history of the Boers. And I also had been still pounding away at the difference between who a Boer is and who an Afrikaner is. Okay? Most people still do not know the difference. And it's a big one, a very big difference, folks. Afrikaners really are not our people. Yes, there are many foolish white South Africans out there who foolishly and ignorantly identify as Afrikaner. But whether you know it or not, you're probably a Boer. And people say, well, why is it so important? Well, folks, it is important because our real, authentic Aryan history with the Boer ethnicity is being genocided. It's being wiped clean off the map in the history books. Nowhere do you hear anything about Boer republics anymore. All you hear about is Afrikaner history and Afrikaner genocide. You know, boo-hoo, the poor Jew Afrikaners are being genocided again. Oy vey, it's like another frickin' Shoah. I'm sick of these Jews, you know, always, oh, what's the word I'm looking for here? They're always deceiving. Trying to make it out as if it's not the Boers being genocided. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today. You know, everybody hears about these farm murders. You know, everyone thinks it's these, you know, random Negroids from the township going in there and slaughtering these Boers, these mighty, powerful Boers, these big men. These families who live off nature. No, they're not weak, folks. These are some of the most intelligent and wise people there are in this world. I mean, if you can live off of nature, off of Mother Nature, and obey and be successful by living off of her natural laws, that makes you a very, very powerful individual, folks. The people living in the cities are the weaklings, as far as I'm concerned. I've lived in both the cities and out here. Well, now I live in the vast plains, but I've lived high up in the mountains, somewhere in the Karoo. I know what it's like to live off of the land here. But you see, they want us gone. They want us gone. Who's they? Oh, who? Yeah, it rhymes with who and starts with a J. Oy vey. Before I get into the rest of the Boer history that I was talking about 2 weeks ago and weeks before that, I figured I would go over a few stories that I had found comical. I used to do this during my old Aryan Way broadcasts, when I first started out doing radio, if I had come across any funny articles or significant articles, you know, if my readers or listeners would send me any, if they were good, I would always read them. And I'm going to do that today. Before that, even though, 2 weeks ago, I promised you folks that I would play some audio for you of this. I didn't even say what it was. I left it as a surprise. I said I would play it at the end of the show, and unfortunately, I never got around to sending Richard the MP3 file of it. I believe I sent him a video file, an MP4 file, and it completely slipped my mind to send him the MP3 file. But you know what? You don't even really need to hear it. I will probably do a better job. All right? This audio video that I heard weeks ago, that I forgot to mention last week, was of this Nigris, okay? This highly sophisticated, this highly intelligent Nigris, okay, from South Africa. Now, this genius, okay, was going on and on about how great the Negroid race is and how everything began in Africa, including the invention of automobiles, the computer, the toilets was invented, plumbing, everything was invented by the Negroid race and in Africa. And I was so angry, but I couldn't stop laughing at the same time. Because off the top of my head, even I know that Detroit, Michigan is not in Africa, and that Henry Ford created the automobile. And I know that Seattle, Washington, and Bill Gates and Steve Jobs or whoever were involved in building the first computers available for the public. I know off the top of my head that the toilet was invented by a white man named Crapper, hence the phrase, I have to take a crap. All right. I know off the top of my head that the Irish were brought over to almost every civilized country in the world to build the sewer systems and invented plumbing. I mean, these are just simple, common sense trivia facts that everybody should know, I would think. But no, no, no. This Negress from South Africa goes on and says that the Negroid is superior and the white man has stolen everything from us. So she says. Oh, folks, it was comical, but at the same time, angering, because most of the Negroids, not only in South Africa, but around the world, actually believe this rubbish. They actually believe that Crapper was a Negroid and invented the toilet in Africa. So there is some comic relief for you. and believe you me, folks, I needed it. Because at the start of this show, I was just so disgusted. Because every single week, there's always some technical issue. And all I want is to do a quality radio show once a week. Is that too much to ask? I mean, if you only knew what it took or takes for me to get online, to prepare a show, and to actually, you know, have it be possible for you to hear me every week, I don't think most people would go through with what I actually go through. But I feel it is my Aryan duty to get on the air as often as I can and share the knowledge that I have gained. I cannot keep it to myself. I think it is a bloody crime to keep this type of information to ourselves if we have it.
Next story, folks. I am not that old, but I've been around since the 70s, okay? This next story, I'm sure all of you in America are very familiar with. Some, I don't know if she's a politician. I can't even think of her entire name, but she's some Latina mestizo Ocasio. Some supporter of hers actually had the chutzpah to go on live TV and say that we need to start eating babies in order to stop climate change. Has it really come to that, folks? Eating babies? Like I stated, I was born in the 70s. And for those of you who were not alive at that time, well, I'll give you a little history lesson. In the 70s, the mainstream Jew media was going on and on and on about global cooling and how the earth was cooling and how we needed to heat it up. They took it as far as they stopped making aerosol spray deodorant cans because, well, it was destroying the ozone layer, okay? So, in the late 80s into the 90s, well, they miraculously solved the global cooling crisis, and it became a global warming crisis. And now, in the late 2010s into the 2020s, yes, folks, now we have to start eating babies in order to stop climate change. This is the lunacy that I have lived through. And while, again, this is one of those stories, I don't know whether to be angry or to just laugh hysterically. Eat babies, folks. We shouldn't stop the Jews who are destroying the climate or our ecology through their terrorism of robbing Mother Nature. No, we shouldn't stop the Jews from raping Mother Nature and destroying the earth and the climate. We need to start eating babies, okay? Yes, they love to blame it on us and our so-called carbon footprint, folks. But let me assure you, it is not you and I whom is destroying the earth. It is not you and I. I would dare to say that it is those terrorist Jews who are polluting the earth by raping Mother Nature, by spraying whatever the hell they spray in the air, by putting toxic waste, fluoride, which is a toxic waste. It's not natural fluoride you'll find in nature. It is actually a toxic waste. The residue, oil to plastic, is the residue is very similar to my ending of natural fluoride. So this is how they're able to get away with telling us that it can put a toxic waste into our drinking water and in paste, okay? It is all our fault, folks. Our fault. Not the Jews. Not at all. And so we start eating babies. I'd like to thank my good friend, Mike, and welcome him to Vision Media. Life happens, and my friend Mike Sledge has really helped me out, and I'm not going to say what he did for me, but I'm going to at least thank him publicly because Mike has done so much for me, his best friend, and such a great teacher, taught me so much. The difference between the Afrikaner and the Boer yet again, and I went over a lot of the Boer history, went even a little deeper into it than I have been in recent months. And really, I had planned, I actually have more to cover. And I will go through just a little bit more, but I have such mind-blowing information that I want to cover the show. It is a new topic, but it really is a continuation. Later on in the show, I will be going over some new history that I learned, and it has to do with the Zulu Nation. And in order for you to understand what is really going on with these farm attacks here in South Africa, you kind of it's kind of nice to know just a little basic history, okay? It's not imperative, but I think you will have a greater understanding if you just understand a little bit about how these niggeroids think, okay? So I'm going to be wrapping up the Boer history for a little while, and then I'm going to be getting into the Zulu and then the modern day farm attacks. I learned some information that just absolutely made my jaw drop. And folks, my jaw does not drop very often anymore these days. So if it made my jaw drop, I'm hoping that it'll make yours drop as well. All right. Let's just get into a little bit of that Boer history. To be honest, there's just a few paragraphs that I wanted to wrap up about the Boer genocide and how today everything is the Afrikaner genocide, right? As I stated several times and have been proven correct, Afrikaner is code word for Jew. Therefore, all we hear anymore is Afrikaner genocide. It's never the Boer genocide. The Boer, who actually had his own republics in this southern part of Africa. No, it's the Afrikaner. You know, those Cape Dutch, those Jews who have been intermixing now since the mid-1600s, who have never had a country of their own. Yes, they've all been subjects of the Yiddish British Empire, of the United Kingdom. It's their genocide, not the Boer genocide, who've had their own nations, 12 of them, to my count. Yes, it's been wiped out of the history books. It's being wiped out everywhere. The monuments, even in the unfree state that I live in this old republic, the Boer Museum has been just erased. And all you see now is Negroid this, Negroid that, and Afrikaner this, and Afrikaner that. Nothing of the Boers, even though it was these Germanic Boer folk hoofed to the death for their own nations and had them stripped from them every damn time. 12 different times, at least. But no, folks, it's an Afrikaner genocide, not a Boer genocide, okay? The history books are being rewritten. Everything's being rewritten. And it's no coincidence that this is happening. Today, people no longer know who the Boers were. And nobody knows about those dirt poor Boer women who, founded the Garment Workers Union. Those famished women who left their beloved farms and had gone to the cities to try to survive after their, I don't want to say defeat, after their genocide in 1902. When the British Yiddish Jews told the white Brits of the British army, I should say the Yiddish army, to feed the women and children glass. Women like Joanna and Hester Cornelius, who even wrote their own plays describing the Boers' history in the cities. Those many thousands of women and girls who who have been marched behind the red flag of the Communist Party in the cities of South Africa, in the four men who founded the Mine Workers Union, now named Solidarity, which is an offshoot of Afriform, which is controlled opposition of the Afrikaner Jew and his Bruderbond, who had fought so valiantly against the mine magnate Jews during mine workers' uprisings at the Witwatersrand, and of whom thousands had been shot dead by their own compatriot soldiers from the countryside, who had been told by the government of Jew Jan Smuts, who posed as a Boer, that these men were the enemies, the communists. Liar. That man, Jan Smuts, was a Jew and a Boer general. And it ended up that they were shooting their own Boer kindred and didn't even know it because of these scumbags who our folk worship today. Nobody knows the history of these Boer folk today because the Afrikaner Bruderbond has deliberately written these facts from the history books. History researcher Elsa B. Brink wrote brilliantly about those defeated Boers in the cities of South Africa who put up so much a valiant fight for their own identity and whose ethnic identity is now again being discarded today in the latest ethnic cleansing facing them. Yes, folks, they are now all Afrikaners, okay? The elitist Afrikaners of the Cape, who had been ashamed of the Boers to the north, who had fought against them and for the British and the Jews and the Negroids, were equally ashamed of these poor, defeated Boers who were trying to survive in their own cities, in their own nations that they formed, forced to work in mines and factories like the quote, the black girls in the factories, as they were referred to. Hand labor was abhorrent to these elitist Afrikaners as to this day, folks. I don't know of many white folk who are ashamed of manual labor, who are ashamed of creating a product, who are ashamed of providing a service that they're good at. No, it's only these Jews who can do fuck all for themselves that have to bring down the Aryan, bring down the Boer, the creativity and the genius of our kind. It is they who look down upon us, and that is one sign, just one, of who they really are. Yes, they are Jews, Afrikaners who look down upon the ingenious in the hard work of the Boer. There's no question in my mind that they are, in fact, Jews. That's why Orania is so newsworthy, because these Afrikaners are actually, well, not letting us in. It's only these elitists. Someone like William D. Hewitt would not be allowed to step foot, or maybe I could step foot, but I would not be allowed to live in Orania, okay? Oh, it is so frustrating. So, just, this is why when people like my friend Tiens Klota get on the air and says that he doesn't even want to work with these Afrikaners, because people who should know better just can't seem to get it through their thick skulls that Afrikaners are really not our folk. Sure, many, many ignorant Aryan folk were brainwashed or were whitewashed into thinking they were Afrikaners, but they're really not. They probably will find out that they are of Germanic stock. I've gone over the number of German folk that were brought to South Africa compared to the French and the Dutch. Most of the so-called French and the Dutch were Murano Jews who converted to Calvinism, to the Reformed Church, and therefore were now considered Protestants. That's how they were able to enter the Dutch East India Company ships that only brought Protestants over to South Africa. Now that you understand, because they have white skin and they're able to convert to a prominently white Christ-insane religion, it's easy to understand now, I hope, why these Cape Dutch Afrikaners really are not our folk. So, I think that's all I have in me. For now, I will, I'm sure, in the future, go back into more Boer history, because, to be honest with you, I am fascinated by it. I love it. I love trying to teach my folk and my friends and my people who doubt me and mock me. I love to teach them the truth. But I really, really would like to move into the Zulu history. For those of you who know me, I'm going to slow the pace down here a little bit, okay? I'm going to sit back, have the last sip or two of my coffee, and I'm going to slow down here a bit, okay? Most of you who know me, most of you who have read my work, who have listened to my 180-plus radio shows that are now very difficult to find on the internet, thanks to our Jew enemy, most of you know that I will not write or say something unless I am absolutely pretty damn positive that it's true. Of course, I've gotten things wrong in the past, and I always will correct myself. Always. Yes, maybe there have been things I could have explained a little bit better that didn't make me necessarily inaccurate, but I forget sometimes that I know things that other people do not know. So when I explain something, it might seem, I don't know, like they're missing something, and it's hard for them to, hard for them to see things through my perspective. This information in the past, I'll give examples, information on the Kahila, information about Afrikaner being code word for Jew, information about SAFRP being the fraud that they were and how they used to beg and plead white folk around the world to send them shekels, even though the Jewish CEO and her people around her and her Jews around her were taking a cut off the top and then giving Negroids next in line. And then if there were any crumbs left, yeah, then the white squatters in the camps would get the crumbs, which consisted of, like, boxed soya mints or genetically modified maize meal called pop that we call here. Just the most disgusting food that basically supermarkets give away for free to the mine workers or to the Negroids who work on the windmill farms, you know? They get these rations, as they're called, and they're free, all right? So I'm not saying that you should, beggars should be choosy, but when these, this isn't even supposed to be about SAFRP, but, you know, when they're begging Aryan folk from around the world for shekels and then give the squatters food that supermarkets in South Africa donate, well, yeah, I was pretty pissed off, and nobody believed me when I said not to donate your hard-earned shekels to SAFRP. But no, no, no. I became an anti-white. I became a saboteur, even. And, yeah. Unbelievable, okay? I kind of got off on a tangent there. But the point I'm trying to make is I don't say something unless I'm pretty damn sure, okay? And everything I've ever written about and most everything I've ever said has been true. And if something was wrong, I always go back and correct my mistakes. My point is, I've been talking with somebody, a source, about the Zulus. And I trust this source. Now, the problem is, there is a language barrier. I am not very good at understanding Afrikaans. So my source speaks Afrikaans and speaks English, but, you know, translating Zulu to Afrikaans to English, and then for someone like me who really knows and fuck all about Zulu history, it's very difficult, you know, to get 100% accurate or to have it organized in my mind so that it's in a perfect order, okay? But I'm going to try my best. This show isn't about Zulu history, all right? It's more of an introduction, and it's more, really, I just want you to know these few things about the Zulu history so that you'll understand the present-day farm genocide of the Boer. That's all there is to it. That's the only reason, for now, that I'm interested in Zulu history. I am one who firmly believes that we must know our enemy. That is why I am able to see and understand the world the way it is today, because I understand my Jew enemy better than 99.999% of people in this world. And I can predict. Hell, I am not a prophet, folks. But damn it, sometimes I look like a prophet because I know my enemy so well. And in the future, I plan on knowing Zulu history, Xhosa history, and all the other Negroid tribe histories. But for now, for this topic that I want to discuss ultimately, which is, you know, the Boer genocide, the modern day farm murders. Yes, we all hear about them every day. We've become desensitized even to them. And it is really no big deal anymore. Yeah, another husband and wife and Aryan children have been wiped off the face of the earth because of some Negroids, right? Who are these Negroids? Nobody ever knows. They think it's the average Negroid from the township that's going in there and brutally slaughtering these big Boer men. You know, these Boer farmers aren't small people, folks. These are big Germanic men. You know, they're farmers, and they're not stupid. You know, the farmer is thought of, or at least I used to get the impression that the farmer is unsophisticated, uncivilized, and just a fool, right? That's what the Jew makes us think, that we're idiots, you know? We, you know, plow the land, and we do the work while the Jew sits back and eats like an effendi, okay? According to that Jew rabbi. That's a quote. Can't think of the Jew's name, but who cares? Screw you, Jew rabbi. Our Boer folk are intelligent. Our Boer folk are far more than intelligent. They're ingenious. And so, what in the hell is going on where these Negroids can go onto these farms and overpower these big Boer, intelligent Boer men who live by the laws of Mother Nature? It takes a man, a woman, a real child to be able to live off of the land. Living in the city is for weaklings to suck the teat of the Jew welfare system. No, folks, the Boer, the farmer, these are not stupid, weak people. So, I've been scratching my head now for at least 3 years wondering how the hell these Negroids can go onto these farms and just brutally slaughter these big Boer men and these tough, beautiful, Germanic Boer women. It just baffles my mind how this is possible. And so, to understand why this is happening and how it's even possible, I think it's important that we understand a little bit of Zulu history. So, let me introduce some to you, okay? And again, folks, please, if I get something wrong, I will correct myself. If it's not in perfect order, please forgive me. This is an introduction, just some facts that you might find interesting. All right? Now. Okay. Wait, that's the wrong. All right. The Zulus are made up of two different tribes, okay? This is another thing, folks. The pronunciation, I'm probably going to butcher. I cannot speak Zulu. My Afrikaans accent is completely awful as well. So if I get these names wrong, bear with me, all right? So the Zulus are made up of the Nguni and the Ngwandi, okay? And basically made their tribal appearance in South Africa in the 1700s, all right? Now, we all know that it was the Cape Dutch and some Boers who were brought here in 1652. So right there, we got these Zulus beat by 48 years, okay? At least 42 years, because it doesn't say when in the 1700s, it just says the 1700s, all right? And basically, these Zulus chased away the Bushmen, known as the Khoisan, from the land that they'd been living off of now for who knows how long. Because even the Khoisan Bushmen, the colored, they're not Negroids, they're not white, they're mixed race colored, is who the Khoisan Bushmen are, okay? If you want my opinion, there was another civilization here way, way long ago, before any of us can even imagine. And in my estimation, these Khoisan were the remnants of the old Aryan civilization and whoever else came and mixed with the Aryans. They are the leftovers, as far as I'm concerned. That's who the Bushmen are, okay? You're not going to find that in any book or history book. You're not going to hear anybody else say that. You know, using the logic and the knowledge that I know, the playbook of the Jew, it pretty much, I would say, it would be an accurate assumption, okay? So, yes, these Khoisan were here, and the Zulus chased them away. Unlike the Aryan, unlike the Boer, and even some of the probably Jew Afrikaners, paid, yes, paid the Bushmen for the land that they were occupying, all right? But there, on the other hand, you have the Zulu running off the Khoisan while the Aryan and probably the Jew paid the Khoisan for land, all right? Now, these Zulus killed many of the Khoisan and the Bushmen. And they actually have the audacity to say that Boers stole their land, all right, at the barrel of a gun. Shaka Zulu's father was an Nguni, and Shaka Zulu's mother, Nandi, was an Ngwande, all right? Now, Zulu's parents come from two different tribes, as I stated, but his father was a prince. Yes? Shaka Zulu's father was a prince. Now, the Nguni and the Ngwande tribes, they came from the east coast of Africa and were slaves of the Egyptians. Now, that's a whole other story there. Who were the Egyptians? Again, I'm pretty damn sure that the Egyptians originally were Aryans. Jews brought in blacks and other individuals of mixed race. The inevitable ever happens, white genocide. And what you see now of the Egyptians, these brown-skinned coloreds, well, those were not the individuals who built the pyramids. It was the Aryans, all right? But anyway, it is saying here that the Zulus were slaves in Egypt. Whoever was occupying Egypt at that time, the Aryan or the Jew, or I shouldn't say occupied, but in charge of Egypt at that time, I don't know, okay? It's not the point. But the point is that they were the Zulus' slaves in Egypt, okay? And they fled. They escaped. Who's that sound like? Oh, it's the poor Jews. We had to flee from Egypt, and Moses parted the Red Sea. Oh, in vain. Yeah. Jews always stealing history. They're so parasitic that they even got to steal the Negroid history. That's how disgusting and unoriginal and just, God, I hate Jews. Yeah, hate them with a passion. So, Shaka Zulu then became king of the Zulus, all right? He became king of the Zulu nation because his father was a prince and ultimately became a king himself. Now, I found this interesting. Shaka actually means spider. And because Shaka was born out of what the Aryan folk, you know, the European folk, would call wedlock, he was known as a spider, okay? Now, Shaka and his mother, they were forced to flee because they were not of Lobola, all right? Now, Lobola is when cattle are offered to the, you know, the male's family, or is it the woman's family? See, I'm not sure, folks. I don't know everything about Negroid culture, okay? But many of you should probably know that cattle are usually offered in order for them to marry, all right? Cattle were not offered to Shaka Zulu's, I believe, mother's family. Even though his father was a king, this Lobola is what we would compare to wedlock. All right? If they weren't officially married, so, you know, through the correct Negroid way. So this is their, you know, this is why I say wedlock, okay? It's not completely accurate wedlock, all right? But Negroid culture is so different. I just used the example of wedlock just so that you can try to get the idea of what I'm saying, all right? Now, Shaka was actually murdered by his two half-brothers. And one of the half-brothers' name was Dingaan. I don't know the other. They murdered him because he didn't actually hate white people. Holy shit. Can you believe this, folks? Shaka Zulu did not necessarily hate white folk. And his fellow Negroids hated that about him. I'm not saying Shaka Zulu loved the Aryan. I'm not saying Shaka Zulu, was friends with the Aryan, but he didn't hate them like most Negroids hate us, all right? So he had to be killed. He had to be assassinated. And so his aunt and two half-brothers got rid of him, assassinated him. Now, Shaka had been known to tell his people that they must actually watch the white people so that they can learn from us, all right? But his people hated that, so they assassinated him. And that's all there is to it. Now, There is a man who I will talk about more, but his name was Silkat. Now, in the time of Ngundi and Ngwandi, the tribes, right? These were the Zulus, right? The other blacks, the other tribes who were nowhere near as powerful as the Zulus, they were called rejects, okay? And basically, they were just out, you know, kind of like the xenophobia that's going on today in South Africa. They hated other Negroids. And it was only the Zulu who was, the supremacist, if you will, okay? All the other blacks, all the other Negroids, they were called rejects, whatever rejects means in Zulu, okay? Now, these so-called rejects, they were called Amakafula, which means that they were spit out. I don't know exactly what spit out, what the intention behind that phrase is, but to me, it seems as if they were rejected. They were just, you know, not a part of. They were rejects, all right? And Amakufala, well, it's a word between the rejects and not others, all right? So basically, it is only the rejects who are calling each other Amakufala. Why is this important? Well, folks, I'll tell you. Because Amakufala is the origin of the word today that no one is allowed to say, and that word is kafir, or kafir, right? It's the African word for, well, sorry, Richard, I'm going to say it here. I'll put it in quotes so it won't be hopefully as racist, but kafir is a synonym for, quote, nigger, unquote, okay? Now, when the whites arrived in the Cape in the 1800s, not the original whites that were there in the 1650s, but more whites that came in the 1800s, these were more of the Boers that came, all right? The rejects were calling themselves this word, and it got picked up by these Aryans, by these Boers who were coming across these rejects. Okay, these rejects of the Zulu tribe, whom they called themselves Amakafula, sorry, which means kafir. Now, only the rejects, like I said, could use that word amongst each other. And it was an insult for others to use the word, especially for the Aryan, especially for the Boer, because like I said, it's comparable to the word, quote, nigger, unquote, all right? Now, over time, Amakufala became kafir, and it's originally started with them. It's very important that we understand this, folks, because who is it that is always blamed for being racist? Huh? Who? Is it the Aryan that's always blamed for being racist? Or is it the Negroid himself who calls himself a racist word? See, it's okay for them to call themselves a particular word, but the double standard, well, no, Aryan man. I was going to say Goyim, you know, because it's kind of like the Jew. They can call us Goyim, but you say anything negative or even disagree with a Jew, and you're an anti-Semite, don't you know? Why they? All right? So, yes, it's the double Jew standard. Do as I say, not as I Jew. They can call themselves Amakafula or Kafirs, but we folks are not allowed. Now, these, I believe it is, well, it's either the Zulus or the so-called rejects. They compared us Aryans to a cow that's not one color, okay? Now, I don't have the information clear here. It was very, the translation was very difficult. But using my own logic, I can't say this is absolutely positive, accurate or not, but it makes sense to me that they were called, they called us or compared us to a cow that's not one color, okay? Now, I think this because, is it because us whites, us Aryans, we all have this pinkish white skin, but we all have this, you know, different colored hair. We all have different colored eyes. And these Negroids, well, they're all one color. They're black, all right? If they're not black, well, they're not Negroids. If they're brown or a light black even, they're of mixed race, okay? Most Negroids in this world aren't even Negroids. They're so, they have so much white blood in them, and they still hate us to a passion. Quite comical, actually. Now, this different colored cow had a white neck, okay? Now, because we don't, or we don't really have the same level of integrity or brain capacity as us, well, they call us this type of cow. Now, it's their way of being racist, okay? As, like, they also like to compare us Aryans, us Boers, us Germanic folk. These Negroids like to compare us to the white scum of the sea that washes up on the beach. You know what I'm talking about? Yes, they compare us to the white scum that washes up on a beach. See how racist they are, folks? They're allowed to be racist. In their eyes, they are supremacists, and they're better than we are, right? But don't you dare, Aryan man. Don't you dare. Think. Don't even think that your genius, that your creativity, that your beauty, that your work ethic, that anything and everything that makes you an Aryan, don't you dare think for a second or have any pride in who you are, or else you are a racist. You are an anti-Semite, boy, they. All right? So, earlier I mentioned a man by the name of Silcott. Now, like I said, I don't know exactly the whole story behind Silcott, but he comes up here again, okay? I'm going to be mentioning the Matabele tribe. Now, Shaka Zulu sent this man called Silcott to basically destroy the Bashutus. Now, the Bashutus, I believe, are another tribe, all right? Or no, Bashutu, I'm sorry, was another Negroid. Pardon me. I don't know who he was. I don't know much about him, all right? But bear with me. Now, ask where they came from. I think Shaka Zulu wanted to know where this guy, Bashutus, I don't know, came from, or I don't know the whole story. You have to excuse me. But the point is that Silcott went to assassinate him, and he couldn't get it right. And he couldn't, he never did assassinate him. And when he came home, he didn't give an accurate report of what actually happened to Shaka Zulu, who sent to take him out, to destroy him, right? So he sent someone to ask Silcott why he didn't give him an accurate report. And Silcott sent a white feather back to Shaka, which means in Zulu, really, to go to hell. Shaka said to Silcox that the Impis, who are the Zulu warriors, that the Impis will be sent behind him to get rid of him since Silcox couldn't do the job, right? So, inevitably, Shaka fled to Musega, and I believe Musega is actually called Kwa Musega, but nothing happened. And there came a time for Shaka, a farewell. And in 1828, Shaka wanted to go to the north to deal with the rejects that I mentioned earlier, okay? These rejects who were not a part of the Zulu tribe. But unfortunately, I guess Shaka wasn't able to... the same thing that happened to Silcox happened to Shaka Zulu. And so the Zulus, they were swallowed up by the smaller tribes, because next happened was, I believe, Blood River. And this is where it gets interesting, folks. This is why everything that I've been telling you leads up to this and leads up to the present day, all right? The Zulus were utterly destroyed by the Boers. I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. Maybe not. There were 60,000 Impis, i.e. Zulu warriors, all right? And there were 464 Boers. And then again, the leader of the Zulus, he was a warrior of the Impis. He called the Boers grasshoppers, and Shaka called the Boers the swallows. And there's reasons for that. I'm assuming because the Boers, you know, trekking throughout the African bush, you know, maybe to these woods they looked like grasshoppers. And also the swallows, I believe it has something to do with the way the Boers built their homes, which is basically out of, you know, the earth, out of mud. But yes, 60,000 Impis were utterly destroyed by 464 Boers. And this is what is known as Blood River. And after this slaughter of the Aryan, of the superior 464 Aryans, the superiority of 464 Aryans, the 60,000 Zulu warriors, the Zulu tribe basically, well, were no more. No more. And it took a long time for them to, you know, become, you know, to form again. And we have to understand, folks, that 464 Boers took out 60,000 Zulu warriors. At the time, Zulus were of the greatest war machines. And Dingaan fled, but he was ultimately killed, and Upanda took over. Now, to the present day, everything these Negroids do or plan is that they go to their ancestors for advice, okay? Now, this is very, very important. These Negroids are extremely superstitious, and they go to their ancestors for advice. This is very, very important. What is also important is understanding the role of the Sangoma. The Sangoma is a witch doctor, and for the most part works with nature, if you will, although in a dark way. Now, I'm skipping over a little bit here and getting to the point, because really, folks, this is, I think, the most important part. And if I don't go a full 2 hours, I think it's, you know, it's going to have to be okay. Because I actually started an hour late, and I think just getting this information is out. This is where my mouth dropped, like I told you at the beginning of the show. I hear people today talking about farm attacks. Everybody does, right? But nobody can really understand why they happened, or you know, why we can't seem to stop them. And what we don't know, and really what I should not know, but I do, because as I said earlier, I know my enemy better than 99.9999% of people on this earth. I know my true enemy. And the reason for these attacks is because the Jew has been, for the past 25 years at least, since they gave away the country to these Negroids, on the surface, the Negroids don't really have control of the country, folks. Of course it's the Jew. They just allow the Negroid to play, to make them think that they're in charge, so that in essence, what they really are is just the proxy army of the Jew, right? But in my estimation, and I had my theory verified. I was listening to somebody, and he verified, because he was listening to a Boer on American radio, basically saying the exact same thing that I had said 3 years ago in two different shows that I've done, and one article I've actually written. What did I write? What did I say? Well, I said, folks, that these Jews are going around South Africa, and they're gobbling up all the farms. And they're spreading all this propaganda around the country that there's a water shortage, and that farming is unsustainable. In that, hey, you better sell, because we're going to give your land away to the Negroid anyway. And so the Jew is doing everything he can to get the Boer off of his land. Right? The Jew is giving the Boer a chance to sell their farms to them. But a lot of these Boers are stubborn. A lot of these Boers are very intelligent. A lot of these Boers can see through the Jew lies. And they, therefore, are telling the Jew to take a hike, kike. Okay? Now this is where the Negroid farm attacks come in. This is what I had figured out in my own mind and had not heard anybody else say over the past 3 years at least. These Negroids are riling up, not the average, well, they are riling up all Negroids in the country, all throughout the continent, all throughout the world, all right? That's easy to see. But it isn't, as I said earlier, the average Negroid from the township who is making or perpetrating, making these farm attacks upon the Boer. No, no, no. These are radical Negroids. These are like EFF and ANC and Black First, Land First, and Communist Black Party, South African Party Negroids, right? These are the so-called organized Negroids. But the only reason they're organized is because the Jew funds them, and the Jew agitates them. And so this is who is actually committing these farm genocides. It is these radical Negroids. And that entire history of the Zulus, I told you, this is why it was so important. Because at Blood River, 464 Aryans, 464 Boers decimated 60,000 of these Negroids. And they'll never forget. Well, because the Jews won't let them forget, okay? And this is where the ancestor worship and the Sangoma come into play. This is why it's so important. How are these Negroids able to brutally slaughter, murder, and genocide these big, tough, genius Boer farmers? Well, this is the part that made my mouth drop. There is something called Muti, or what is it? Dopa? Is it? I always forget the name. Dopa, okay? D-O-E-P-A, it's called. And this is how they actually are able to take out these Boers and their families. Unfortunately, our Boer farmers have all kinds of Negroids working on these farms, all right? It's kind of like have to have them on there. I don't know why. I wouldn't let one anywhere near me if I had my way, but a lot of Negroid garden boys, a lot of Negrist maids, there's a lot of Negroid farmhands, all right? They're all over the place on these farms, so they know the farms really, really well. And unfortunately, as much as I like to think the Aryan and the Boer is as intelligent as they are, they're not as streetwise, maybe, as we should be. They're very trusting. They think because they feed, the Boers feed them well and take good care of them and invite them into their home, even, that they can trust these savages. And so what happens is there's a term of individuals, they're called vispitas. And basically they are maids or the garden boys or the farm hands, right? And they're the ones who go out in front and they do the scouting reports, right? And they will leave what's called dupa or muti, right? Now, muta or dupi is, I don't know, I'll explain it the best I can. It has two functions. Basically, it's an object, I think, that has some sort of drug or natural type drug, or I don't know how quite to explain it, all right? But it, when the Boer or someone in the family comes in contact with them, at night, during the attack, things seem to be off. They seem to be sleepy, or they seem to be as if they're in a dream state, and they're not fully aware like they normally would be. All right? And also, this dupa or muti that is planted somewhere in the house for the family to find, and it's also planted around the house so that the second group, the hit squad, can get this muti. And so when they break in or go into genocide the Boer and his family, these Boers are in this dreamlike state or this drowsy state. And once the slaughter begins, these Negroids are, many people have said, witnesses have said, that they turn into these just monsters. They're not themselves anymore. It's even said that something is possessing them, and they're just, it's like the devil in front of you, you know, just the most brutal of slaughter you can possibly imagine. And it all has to do with this dupa or this muti. And it all has to do with the Sangoma. And it all has to do with the ancestors whom they turn to for advice, whom they turn to for war advice or for wisdom. And they do this all because of this, they think, supernatural event that happened where 464 Boers absolutely slaughtered 60,000 of the biggest, baddest Zulu warriors around, all right? This, folks, is what is really happening. Or so, this is my understanding of what is really happening. If there's anybody out there whom is able to correct me or give me more details, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Because to me, folks, this is absolutely fascinating. I have always been into the supernatural. To me, really, there is no supernatural. But to me, it's consciousness. You're either on an extremely high conscious level or an extremely low conscious level. And you can commune with the lowest of the most evil, filthy demons, if you will, or spirits. And you can also commune with the highest of the Aryan gods. And if you're not prepared for this black magic, it is very, very powerful. Most of our folk are not in tune with themselves spiritually. They look outside themselves for some gods, for some dead Jew on a stick who's going to save them. This, in my estimation, is why they're so able to be conquered and slaughtered, because their conscious levels are not, they're not awake. This is why the dark is overpowering the light. I hope that makes sense to you. Because I'm off now my source. This is me talking, all right? And many of you might not agree with me. Many of you might not understand what it is I'm saying. But I know there's several of you out there who do. I have no idea how long I've been talking here. I'm going to check right now. An hour and 19 minutes, it appears. This show was supposed to be a lot longer. But because I had to redo the first part again, I know I missed a big chunk of info. And it's getting very late here. And my mind and my voice, folks, is really coming to its limit. And so, I'm going to end the show with a few paragraphs that I feel are very fitting. Not all of you are going to understand what I'm saying here. Or if you do, you're going to laugh at me or mock me. And that's fine. Because I know who I am. I know who I am on a spiritual and on a conscious level. And I found this one page in a little pamphlet that all it is basically references all in Afrikaans. But there's one page here written in English, and there's one reference to what I'm about to read to you. And I looked it up online, and damn it, folks, there's nothing of it. And the reference of what I'm about to read to you, the book is called Visions and Prophecies from the Mountain, Book 6, page 24. Like I said, I looked up the book. There's nothing of it anywhere. It's an English page amongst about 10 pages of Afrikaans language references, all right? My partner dug this up in one of her boxes. She's been looking for it for a long time because she, I've been telling her things since, you know, we've been together. And a lot of the things that I've been telling her are in this, these few paragraphs that I'm about to read you, all right? Again, you can mock me, that's fine. But it concerns angels. Now, I've written an article called fallen angels, aliens, or Aryans. I believe that those three words, aliens, Aryans, and angels, I believe they are, you know, can be used synonymously. But this particular page, well, it uses the word angels, okay? Angels are constantly choosing to embody as humans, to carry out a specific purpose. And once this is complete, they return home to become angels again. But once they choose to embody, their memories were wiped clean, and none of them remember who they are until they get back across the Great Divide and through the door again. All of your life, you knew that you were different. You were always like an outsider looking in, and you never fit into society. Neither could you find God in any churches. Your life fell apart with a stream of, quote, mishaps, unquote. From the beginning, your life has been very hard, and you struggled for many years to make ends meet. My child, it is perilous for an angel to come to earth. And remember, folks, this is me speaking. Use the word Aryan in place of angel. You think of it in that context. My child, it is perilous for an Aryan to come to earth. All have the highest goals and intentions, but once they cross the veil and their memories are erased, they're like a fish out of water. It is so easy for them to become lost, very lost, before they realize who they are. And as I said, a number never do know who they are as long as they are in the physical. Others always know they are different, and most never seem to fit in. Still, others find out they are Aryans, or it says here, angels, before they exit their bodies. Some minister, mostly in churches, and some are missionaries. But many belong to no church, just as you belong to none. That's what I forgot to talk about earlier, folks. I was going to talk about missionaries and mercenaries. I'll have to get back into that next week. That's why I'm coming up short. All right, but anyway, back to this. Yeah, some minister mostly in churches, and some are missionaries, but many belong to no church, just as you belong to none. My child, being an Aryan / angel within the earth, can be one of the loneliest journeys, for angels do not fit in, and if they try to, they are rejected by many at a very deep and subliminal level. They are always seen as different, and though they may love them and even be drawn to them in many ways, they are not understood. They cannot be understood by simple human thought processes, and indeed, they are an enigma, even to themselves. They know that they cannot do what the world does without swift judgment or punishment from their God, yet they may not verbalize it in exactly this way. They get buffeted by the dark tides of this earth, and they're often confused by the very difficult lives they have. So they are put through the fire over and over again, so that they can grow spiritually as well. So we have a dual process going on here, folks, wherein mankind is growing spiritually to become angels, and I believe many are. Just look at the coloreds who practice this Hindu Aryan religion, for example. Whites are revered whenever they're not hated. But anyway, I'll read this last sentence again. So, we have a dual process going on here, wherein mankind is growing spiritually to become angels, or I would say Aryans, and angels, i.e. Aryans, are growing spiritually to to become ruling angels, or I would say, Aryans. Folks, these two paragraphs here spoke to me and speak to me. I felt different my entire life. I felt like I was on a journey. I was so lost most of my life. I once was at a pretty low conscious level, and I'm trying so hard to climb back up. I'm trying so hard to fight for my race. I'm trying so hard to make it day after day. And I think this, I hope, inspires those of you who understand this struggle that I'm talking about, this struggle that I'm referring to. There's so many days I want to throw in the towel. There's so many days that I get out of bed. But we have to keep on, and we have to survive, and we have to win this damn war. This is a spiritual war we're in, folks. Yes, it's in the physical realm, but don't you dare think for a minute it's not a spiritual war. These Negroids are using their low black magic spiritual energy ancestors. Jews are using their Talmudic black magic against us. The entire world is working against us while we're spiritually asleep, while we're searching outside of ourselves for salvation. And for a savior, we need to look within ourselves. We need to identify our own Aryan spirit within and nurture it and have it grow like a plant from seed to it reaches the fruit. We must start reaping what we sow. We must stop working and slaving away for the enemy. We must try our best to reconnect with our families, to love our partners and wives and children. But things are so hard, I know. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope I will be back next week. I'm not insinuating something bad is happening or anything's wrong or anything. I'm just saying, you know, the technology, you know, something always seems to go screwy. But I hope and plan to be back next week. So, my friends, my Aryan folk, thank you for listening, and cheers.